or this evening, this afternoon's webinar regarding this Fulbright Scholar in Residence program. If you are seeing the screen, it says Fulbright and it has the logo there. That means that the webinar has begun. Hopefully you can also hear me. There are two ways to listen to the webinar, either through your computer audio or through by dialing in using the number on the GoToWebinar module. If you could please, or if you're having any technical difficulties or anything like that, please put in a comment in the questions box, which is also in the module. And you may also opt to raise your hand, which is also in the module, to let us know if there's some sort of issue. So my name is Cecilia Kaczynski-Mulder. I'm a program manager here at the Institute of International Education. I'm also joined by my colleague, Alyssa Impervento, who's a program officer here at IIE. And we are happy to also be joined by David Levin, who is a program manager at the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs at the United States Department of State. We will be doing a little bit of a brief overview about what the Fulbright Scholar in Residence program is about. But for the most part, this is your time as an institution looking to apply. We're here to take your questions. We're also going to do a walkthrough of our newly enhanced application system through Embark. So we will be able to show you what the functionality of the system looks like. Largely, the application itself is the same. It's just on a different platform. So if while you're working through an application, if you have specific questions, you can feel free to ask those here. If it's relevant to the point at which we are in the webinar, I will address those questions at that point. Otherwise, there will be ample time at the end of the webinar to go through any questions that you may have regarding the system and regarding the program itself. So I'm going to turn it over to Alyssa, who's going to be doing the overview portion for us about both the Fulbright program as well as the Scholar in Residence program, and then we'll move into the more technical elements.
Okay. Hi, everyone.
So the Fulbright program itself is the flagship international exchange program that the United States Department of State does administer. And so this was started back in 1946 by Senator J. William Fulbright to provide opportunities for mutual exchange and mutual understanding between people of the United States and people in the surrounding world. So we've been going strong for a little over 70 years at this point. We have many facets to the Fulbright program, including the Fulbright Scholar in Residence program, which is an institutional opportunity. We also have the Fulbright U.S. Scholar program. We have visiting scholar opportunities. We have opportunities for students, for English teachers, for foreign language teachers. You name it, there are many different programs under the Fulbright umbrella. So the program itself, all aspects of the program are sponsored by the U.S. Department of State's Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs, and then the Fulbright Scholar and Student programs are administered by the Institute of International Education. Related to the Scholar in Residence program, which you're all tuned in to hear about today,
The Fulbright Scholar in Residence program gives campuses the opportunity to host a visiting scholar on their campuses for either a semester or a full academic year. And during that time, the grantees will be primarily teaching undergraduate courses. But during that time, they'll be teaching and also engaging across the campus and with the local community, providing a cross-cultural and international perspective with the campus and also the community and city that they'll be in. The application is put forward by the institution. And again, you can apply to have a scholar on your campus for either one semester or a full academic year. So the application is open now, and the deadline is October 16th. So we're happy to answer any questions you may have as you prepare your application before submitting it in the fall. Okay. So this is just a bit of a list of the institutions that the Scholar in Residence program targets. So as you can see here, we're looking primarily for institutions that have don't frequently have the opportunity to host visiting scholars on their campuses or maybe looking to internationalize their campuses a little bit further and create opportunities for engagement overseas. So American Indian and Alaskan Native serving institutions, Asian American and Native American Pacific Islander serving institutions, Hispanic serving institutions, historically black colleges and universities, predominantly black institutions, community colleges, and small liberal arts colleges. We also do encourage rural colleges and universities to apply. And if you don't fit into one of these particular categories, your institution may consider partnering with one of these types of institutions and put forth an application that way.
David, would you like to talk a little bit about the kind of institutions served by SIR? And the next slide will include a breakdown of some of the institution types and as far as what we've seen in trends and things like that.
Sure. Thank you all for tuning in. And as Alyssa said, we're reaching out to specific kinds of institutions. So you can tell perhaps by the group that in addition to institutions that have infrequently hosted scholars, we're also reaching out to institutions that serve minority audiences, because our experience is they typically also are less engaged with their national activities and clearly have that kind of a need for their students, for their institutions. So that's the group we're reaching out to. We've targeted those kinds of groups for many years. Every year we see good numbers of applications from the various groups. I would say the community colleges probably lead the way in terms of large percentage of proposals as a group. We also do fairly well with historical black colleges. We're seeing more and more Hispanic serving institutions applying, as well as some Asian American serving, Native American serving. Tribal colleges might be the toughest group in terms of finding a niche with SIR, but we're hoping we'll see some of those this year. So it really is it's a program that really promotes internationalization. And particularly the schools that are doing this, because they in a sense, have not done a lot of this, they really appreciate the value of the program and the benefits of it.
All right. Thank you, David. Before we get into the timeline, I wanted to, as promised, do a bit of a walkthrough of the applications. If you just bear with me as I switch over to the web browser, I'm taking us to the main CIS webpage. So this is the main webpage for the entire Fulbright Scholar Program. When you're here on the landing page, if you kind of hover over Programs and then you click on U.S. or you move down to U.S. Institutions, you'll see Scholar in Residence is here. On our website, you see that it's laid out here as far as what we have available to you. We have a lot of resources on the website. So we have highlight stories about successful institutions who have hosted SIR. We have, you know, a little bit of a brief overview again about what the Fulbright Scholar in Residence program is about. So if you want to discuss with the other people on your campus as to how your institution could benefit from the Fulbright Scholar in Residence program, you can direct them to the website as well. You also see that we have our webinars here, and then we have our archive webinars available for you for any previous ones that we've had, which have included an overview webinar as well as webinars that we offered for specific institution types. And then looking forward, we will be having another kind of advising type session about 1 month before the applications due, but you see all of these items here. I want to focus in on the application tab. So if you click on the application tab, there are two main things that I would like to point out, and that is the link for the online application. And then this is the application guidelines link. So our application guidelines include even more information than what we have shared in the webinars as far as what we're looking for in each section of the application. So definitely read it and read it more than once if you're kind of curious about certain points. It includes all of the information related to what to include in kind of the academic program of the scholar or things like that. So it also includes some contact information as well as another link for the application itself. So our Fulbright Scholar in Residence application can be found through our Embark system. So if you click right here, you'll be taken to the new page. So if you've ever applied for Fulbright Scholar in Residence Program in the past, the landing page here may look different. Something to note is that the login that you used for previous applications is still active within the system. You'll just have to use the new link to access it. If you have not started a Fulbright Scholar in Residence application before, you can register here on this particular page, and then it'll take you, it'll ask you information about your email address, your first name, last name. You'll set up a password from there, and then you'll be kind of directed to back to the landing page of SIR in order to initiate the application. So I'm going to log in. Hopefully I remember my password. It's always tricky, as you know. All right. Try that one more time. All right. So now we are in the module for the application. Now, it's very important to know as well, if you've ever applied for Fulbright applications before, and usually if you apply for other applications, there's this option that you can kind of save as you go along. So that's very much the case with the Fulbright Scholar in Residence program, so don't feel that you need to sit down and do your application in one go from start to finish. In fact, I do recommend that if you've not logged into the application module as yet, that you go ahead and start a login for yourself so you can get acquainted with what the system looks like. So we have the information as far as the application. I didn't go any further than starting or opening a login so that we could walk through it here, but you'll be asked the question about whether or not you're a U.S. higher education institution. So since the Fulbright Scholar in Residence program is open to U.S. Institutions, the institution would be putting forward the application, so you'll indicate yes right there, and then say the next, and then it'll take you to the beginning portion of the application, where you're going to enter, where you will enter in your U.S. institution information. So you'll include the name of the institution, you'll include your city, state, zip code, your institutional website. If you are putting forward a joint proposal, so Alyssa and David talked about the joint proposal, so that would be if you're partnering with another institution in your area to put forward an application, you would also be in, you would indicate yes here, and then you would include their institutional information as well. If you fall into one of the institution types, minority-serving institution types, you can include that designation here. I highly recommend doing that. And then if you fall into sort of an other minority-serving category, so if you do have a high, a large number of minority students in your population, but you're not one of the designated groups, you can indicate that there too, so that'll flag your application for us. You would be directed to or asked to include a responsible administrative official, so you would indicate someone on your campus who would be able to sign off on any financial support for the scholar or sign off on their affiliation itself, and that would be after, if your application is successful, once the scholar has been confirmed, then we would reach out to the host institution to confirm the affiliation of the scholar there. So you can include their information, as well as we ask that the responsible administrative official include a letter of support in the relevant section of the application. So as you see, I didn't fill anything into that page, but I still saved and moved on, so you can you know, move through the application and get a feel for what it looks like without entering in the information at the outset. Now, in the previous page, if you did indicate that you were doing a joint proposal, if you put yes, then that would pull up information for a secondary administrative official and a secondary hosting institution area. So the proposed program dates, we are currently soliciting applications for the 2018-2019 academic year. So you would just make sure that the program dates fall within that period of time. So what I would say, too, is to kind of look at your academic calendar, and if you have any sort of like orientation that you would like the scholar to be included in, please do include that in the dates here, because we do go through and budget each of the proposals at the time of the review committee meeting, so we want to have as accurate a timeline as possible. The principal contact for academic arrangements, so that would be the day-to-day contact for the scholar. So when you're filling in this information, you kind of have the pull-down for, you know, for their title, and then the fields themselves are completely completely fillable here. So then you would just type in the information that you need, and you would go through here. So I'm going to make Alyssa my principal contact here. And then you would just indicate, include any fields that have a star next to them. So that's very important to include that information there. And then you'd include their contact information too. Here under the financial support, we would just ask for you to provide an estimate. So if you are going to offer some sort of salary supplement and or in-kind support, you would just kind of put the dollar amount in here. And then later on in the narrative proposal, then you would expand on that particular information. Now, we're asking for the salary ranges here to give us a sense of the faculty makeup on your campus and the kind of salary ranges that include. This just gives us a little bit of a bigger picture of what your campus makeup is. Very importantly here, you're offered the, or your institution is allowed to either name a specific scholar or request recruitment of a scholar. So here, if you indicate yes, you'll see that the application will expand slightly to allow you to include information about that specific scholar. So we would be asking you to include their biographical information, what their current position title is, what department or division they are on their home campus, what their home institution is, and so forth. So you can provide information for up to three people, but remember, to write your proposal based on that particular individual, and we're going to be also sort of vetting the scholar throughout the process. If you would like to request recruitment, so you're not naming a specific scholar, you'll just click on no, and then you see that the application form changes to ask you to list up to two different countries within one world region. So if Alyssa was looking to invite a scholar from either Vietnam or China, she would just scroll through there. And then later on in the narrative proposal, you'll be given the opportunity to sort of outline what you're looking for as far as a scholar goes. So we would ask you to outline what discipline, if there was a level that if there was a level of scholarship that you were looking for somebody for, like if at your institution, in order for somebody to come and teach on campus, they needed to have 5 years of teaching experience, you can include that all a little bit later on in the narrative proposal. If you've ever had a Fulbright Scholar in Residence on campus before, so either in the immediate past or even further back, you can include, or you should include, the year of the award, where the scholar came from and what the discipline was. So we try to promote the Scholar in Residence program among a diverse slate of hosting institutions. So we do encourage institutions that have never applied or never hosted a Scholar in Residence before to consider applying for the program. We do have some institutions that periodically do come back and apply for the Scholar in Residence program, so they would include that information here. If you're unaware of whether or not there has been a scholar in residence on your campus previously, we do have a list of institutions going back till about 2010 for the scholar in residence program listed on our website. You'll see institutions served by SIR as a section in the SIR website. You can take a look there. You can also contact us if you have any questions, because that'll also come up in the section where you talk about previous internationalization efforts on your campus. After you submit the application, if you didn't indicate any and we are made aware or have an idea that in the past you've had one, we will reach out to you just to let you know. So the proposal summary here, we would just ask you to include a brief summary about what your particular proposal, what you're proposing to do. So what courses the scholar would be teaching on campus. This is just a very brief snapshot of what the composition of your scholar in residence program entails. So it's a 700 character limit. Fear not, you'll have ample opportunity in the narrative proposal to outline everything. This would just allow us to kind of see in brief as we're reviewing through the application. All right, so then in the next particular section of the application, the institutional profile essay, so our narrative proposal itself is composed of two different parts. It's composed of the institutional profile essay as well as the proposed program and financial support. So there are two separate pages on the SIR application in which to upload this information. So here the institutional profile section would include information about your institution mainly, so the makeup of your campus, the institution's current and previous experience with internationalization, short and long-term goals. Note here that we have a 2 megabyte file size limit, so that's why we do split it up between two different pages. And when you're ready to upload the first part of the narrative proposal, you would just save it on your desktop or save it in your My Documents section. And you can upload that as a Word document, or you can upload that as a PDF if you prefer. So you would just click to upload the file. And then you would click on the file that you were looking to upload. And then you'd open that file. I'll go ahead and just pick something to do here if I have it. All right, so you'll see what the valid types are. You can either do the PDF, the document, or the document X, and then once it'll show that it's successfully uploaded to the system, and then you'll click to upload it, and then you'll be able to view it as a PDF within the actual application form. So you'll do that for the next few pages in the application. We have a few different areas here. So the next page is the proposed program and financial support. So this would include really the bulk of your proposal. So you see the previous page was about 4 to 5 pages in length on average, and then this section would be about 8 to 9 pages on average. There's more information about each of these individual sections within the guidelines, so definitely consult those. But mainly we're looking at this academic program of the scholar where you're outlining what courses the scholar would be teaching while they're on campus. And it's a similar, similar process to upload it. You would just have the file saved in a central location. I always suggest to people to put any of the relevant documents that you'll end up uploading into the application, make a folder on your desktop so they're easy to find the different items, and then you'll be able to upload the file from there, paying attention to any of those file limits. David, would you like to share anything about the two parts of the narrative proposal that might be helpful as far as putting forward the application and kind of the importance of it?
Sure. So it's important that you tell us, you talk about your institution. What is your internationalization history? What is your long-term objective, your short-term objective? What have you done? What do you want to build upon? Give us a sense of who you are as an institution and what your objectives are. And then tied to that is your discussion about the scholar, whether you're naming a scholar, whether you're asking a scholar to be recruited. We want to see how those two pieces fit together. How is the scholar you're asking for, either by name or by country, fitting your notion of internationalization? How is it helping you further internationalize your campus, your curriculum, your surrounding community? So those two pieces really fit together, and together they give us a picture of sort of who you are and how you'd like the SIR program to help you further that internationalization effort.
And then in the next section here would be related specifically to a name, like if you were naming a specific scholar, we would ask you to upload CVs as well as 2 letters of recommendation for that particular candidate or that scholar. Very important. is that in this particular page and in all of the different pages of the application where you're uploading documents, you can only upload one file per page. So be sure to combine all of these three items into one PDF, and then you'll be able to upload the file from there. So you would be including the CV as well as those two letters of recommendation as one file to upload that information. The process to upload is the same for each of the different pages of the application, so just to bear that in mind. And then we have letters of support. So these would be letters of support for your institutional application. So one of the letters of support, of course, is the kind of letter from your responsible administrative official, but you can ask other departments on campus to provide a letter to talk about either what they might invite the scholar to do while they were on campus, or perhaps talk about what the enthusiasm or interest might be in having a visiting scholar coming through campus. You can also ask your community organizations that you are outlining any activities that would be going on in the greater community. You can also include their letters here in the letter of support section. So the same thing that I said about the CV and letter of recommendation for the named scholar, all of those PDFs would be combined into one and then uploaded together into this particular page. So if you run into any issues with that, if you're not really sure how to combine the PDFs, just let us know here at the SIR program, and we can help you kind of combine those documents together to ensure that they fit within the file limit. David, anything to say about the letters of support and kind of how they enhance your application?
Yeah, I think that they're important because it shows us that you thought through the process of, in addition to teaching, which is the main activity that the scholar is engaged in, what will the scholar do across campus so they're engaged with students, with faculty, with staff beyond the courses specifically that they're teaching? And what will they do within the community to help develop links between your campus and the scholar and the surrounding community? If you thought through that process, you actually have letters of support that shows us that you've actually talked to some of the other players who will be involved, and you've gotten letters of support, so that you're showing us that specifically what your scholar might do. It's a little bit more than theoretical, because you've actually talked with some of the host organizations and some of the other parts of campus who will be engaged with the scholar. It gives us a better sense of sort of a more complete application.
Mm-hmm. All right. So the next section, as I outlined before, this would be the letter from your responsible administrative official. So we actually have a separate section for that. A little bit of a trick for you if you're having trouble getting to the file limits is that if you have, as long as all of the components are in the application and in somewhat of the same order, if you have an abundance of letters of support for your institutional application, feel free to split them between the letter of support page and the responsible administrative official page. So, you know, I went out there and I really got a good response. So I had, say, 15 letters. Maybe I put 7 letters on one page and 8 letters on the other. They'll all upload in the same way, and they'll all be in the order that you want them. It's just a way to sort of use the system to be able to include everything that you would like to, and hopefully reduce any headaches that might be related to trying to combine the documents. We also ask for sample syllabi and course outlines. So this would give us a sense for, like, if you're at the point at which you're working with a scholar and you know exactly what course they would like to teach, or if you're either requesting or naming a scholar and you have an existing course that you would like them to include some of their perspectives in and would like to share with us what the course might look like or what it currently looks like, you can upload those into this particular section. You don't need to include any boilerplate text, so any kind of institutional policies or things like that. We just really would like to get a sense of what the course might be designed to be. And know that, you know, we understand that as you work through the process of preparing for a scholar to come on campus, sometimes different things might evolve or grow. So, you know, we understand that this might be sort of a preliminary outline for what a scholar could teach while they're on campus. All right, and then you'll be taken to the section called review. You'll see a lot of things are going to turn up in red, so any required fields that you may leave blank, it'll actually, in this section, in the inspector section, it'll tell you exactly what's missing from the application, so you can go back to that particular section and finish off the parts that are missing. So also, if you're wondering if when you're working through the application and you're not quite finished, you're going to come back and work on it, but you accidentally press submit, you don't have to think that I've received your application in error or anything like that. It'll pull up anything that might be missing from your application, and you can kind of check your progress through the application that way as well. When you get to the point where all of the items have been uploaded and everything is set, then you won't have any of this here. It'll just tell you that your application had been successfully submitted. And then Alyssa and I would be able to access your application through the Embark system. And then once you've submitted it on October 16, 2017, we'll conduct a technical review of the application and reach out to you if any of the components of the application may be missing. We will reach out to you to kind of round up anything that's left over. Also, after you submit your proposal, you'll be able to download a PDF version of your entire proposal. So you may keep that for your records if you'd like to refer back to, but we will receive and be able to view the PDFs in our system once everything's submitted and comes through. So then a little briefly back to my PowerPoint here, you can see the timeline. So as I mentioned, in October we do conduct the technical review, but even before the technical review, even before you submit your application, we are happy to read any draft proposals. We're also happy to talk through some of the ideas that you have for the Scholar in Residence program, so please feel free to reach out to us and we'll set up a call, or if you just would like to discuss via email, we can do that as well. You know, I do kind of encourage getting that initial feedback through the draft process and to strengthen your application for the final submission. In December, we do have an external review committee that meets, and so they work through the proposals to recommend proposals for funding. And then in January, we would notify host institutions as to the review outcome while we're also seeking the approval, review and approval of the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs, as well as the J. William Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board. And then once we get that approval, we will be working with your institution to confirm any funding elements through your administrative official. Also from January through April, we're working with the Fulbright Commissions and Public Affairs, or the Public Affairs sections at the U.S. Embassy, to confirm any named scholars, as well as to request recruitment of scholars for the relevant proposals. Anytime we request recruitment, we will supply a slate of candidates to your institution for your final approval, so you can determine who, where we are able to recruit more than one scholar. We would seek your final approval as far as which scholar would be best to undertake the grant that you proposed. From April to June, so really the time of year we are in now, we're processing the grantees' documentation and providing them with their grant documents and their grant packets. And then usually, starting in August, the scholars will start arriving on your campus to undertake their particular grant activities. Anything else to add about the overall process, about the program itself?
Maybe a word about named scholar versus recruited scholar. So in your application, as Cecilia said, you have a choice. You can specifically name a scholar, or you can say, please recruit for me. In the case of the recruited scholar, you're probably not going to know quite as much as to what they would teach, because you don't know specifically who they are. So we understand why your proposal might be a little more general as to what they would do. When you're naming the scholar, you're more specific because you know specifically what that scholar has to offer, and you know specifically what you'd like them to teach. when you're asking us to recruit and we tell you that you can actually list up to two countries in the same world region, please, when you think through your proposal and you're talking about, for example, we'd like a scholar from China or a scholar from Japan, make sure that in your proposal you've talked about both countries and you're not specifically talking about one versus the other, because when we're reaching out to China and Japan to recruit for us, if your proposal talks about China but not about Japan, then it's harder for us to recruit for that Japanese scholar because you have not said enough about Japan in your proposal. So make sure that it's balanced in terms of the two countries that you're looking for if you decide to go that route.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then as far as application resources go, we were just on the Fulbright Scholar in Residence website. That is your one-stop for information. But I also would like to reiterate again that we, as a team, are probably one of the better resources we have as well, because we're happy to talk through different ideas that you might have about the Scholar in Residence program. You might think that what you're proposing to do, maybe you don't think that it's quite what SIR might be looking for. Well, we can help you make a case for how that would work for the Scholar in Residence program and how your institution could best utilize the program. So we're happy to talk through any questions that you might have, or we're happy to also schedule calls with a larger group of people if you're having a group put together the proposal, perhaps from different areas of your campus and things like that. So between the information on the website, definitely read through that first, and then we're happy to initiate any calls and discuss the Scholar in Residence program.
Shannon, had a point about on the website also, you'll notice that there's a frequently asked questions section, very useful for you. We've been doing this a long time. We have a good sense of the kinds of questions that come up. There's also information that talks about proposals that are not successful, what is typically an area in the proposal that's not as strong as it should be, which might mean that you're not recommended for funding. So take a look at those. I think that gives you good tips on how to write a success proposal and how to avoid some of the pitfalls.
Mm-hmm. Good point, David. Thank you. All right. And then before kind of addressing the questions that have been coming through, we also have another opportunity for your institution that would allow you to get your feet wet with having a Fulbright Scholar on campus, in this case for a shorter period of time, but it'll still give you a sense for what it might take to invite the scholar. It also is a really good opportunity to start kind of getting the excitement going among your community members. That's also a really great way to use the program. Alyssa, would you talk a little bit more about the Outreach Lecturing Fund program?
Sure. The Outreach Lecturing Fund is a program where we work with the Fulbright Visiting Scholar Program. So it's the opportunity for you to invite a visiting scholar to your campus for several days for short-term guest teaching, so giving a lecture, a talk to students, to faculty, something like that. So like the Scholar in Residence program, it's an institutionally driven application, so you would submit the application via our website, and then the scholars will come to campus, again, to provide lectures for faculty or students. Speak with classes. They can also become engaged with the community, as with the Scholar in Residence program. So it's a good opportunity to start to make some of those connections, get a feel for what it would be like to host a scholar on your campus, and see sort of where there might be opportunity to go from there with the Scholar in Residence program. So if you have an idea of a visiting scholar that might be in the country who you would want to invite, you're welcome to go ahead and apply. If you know that you would like to have someone come from a particular region or based on a particular topic, we have our online scholar directory, which has a list of over 900 scholars who are currently in country, and you can take a look at that and arrange to invite them that way. And if you have any particular questions about the Outreach Lecturing Fund, the email address is olf@iie.org, so you're welcome to reach out. We also have this on our website where the Scholar in Residence program is, so you can take a look at that information on there as well.
All right. And finally, I have included our contact information here for your reference, so you can feel free to reach out to us with any further questions that we might not get to in the time of the webinar, but we do have some time left to address any questions that you might have, or if you have questions that may be specific to your particular institution, sometimes that comes into play. You can feel free to reach out separately to sir@iie.org, and we will address any questions that you might have from there. So the first question that we have is more of a technical one, and so we have a Fulbright program advisor on the webinar here, and we have a question about the login. I believe the login would be the same, but given that we just moved to a new platform, I will, I see your name, so I will actually find out for you and reach out separately about that. I believe, again, that it should be the same since it's still the Embark system. All right. It looks like that was solved, so that's good. yes, definitely try out your login if for whatever reason it's not working or something. We do have tech support. You will be directed to our tech support, and they'll be able to work with you through that particular case. So then we have another question about who on the campus would actually be putting forward the Fulbright Scholar in Residence institutional application. And so it really does vary from one campus to the other depending on your makeup. So sometimes we see that the application may be initiated out of a grants office. Sometimes the application is initiated out of a particular department or school. Sometimes it's generated out of an individual. David, what is your kind of take on that, or what should an institution consider when trying to put together a group to apply for this?
I think it's a mixed bag in terms of who puts the application forward. The only thing we would suggest is that you form some kind of committee on campus to design your proposal. That way that you're building in, taking into account different aspects of the campus that might value interaction with the SIR, both in terms of a department or a school, perhaps your international office, perhaps your academic affairs office, whatever departments you think would be engaged with the scholar, they're probably the best group to form to work through your proposal, sort of design the blueprint as to what your scholar will do in terms of teaching, in terms of campus engagement, in terms of involvement with the community at large. But in terms of who submits it, that's really sort of up to you, and it's more of a technical thing. That's who's filling out the application per se.
Mm-hmm. We do have some instances where we have a strong network of Fulbright program advisors. We have a network of Fulbright liaisons for the scholar program. You are the sources of what the Fulbright program is about, so you would definitely be part of that conversation if you are on the line now listening, just because you bring and provide that Fulbright reference, and you do have sort of that main line into the Fulbright program and the contacts here at the Institute of International Education. So one thing to note as well is that we've seen through some successful proposals, as David's talking about, drawing from different areas on campus. So, although we would be sponsoring and issuing the DS-2019s, you may also want to consult your international office on campus to see about what events or what resources they might have to a visiting scholar or student. That might be helpful to your overall plan. A lot of times we see maybe the human resources department involved. We see the finance department involved. We see sometimes the provost or president's office involved, the dean's office. So in the narrative proposal itself, there's a section called oversight. So sometimes you might outline who's doing what on campus to enhance or to assist the scholar while they're on campus. So really, again, it is dependent on how the makeup of your campus might be or what might be appropriate. And then any letters of support as far as who they're addressed to, we don't have like a specific rule as far as who to address those letters to. Sometimes they're addressed to the Fulbright Review Committee. Sometimes your community partners might actually address the letters to you as the person at the institution who's putting forward the application. As long as, you know, we're really mostly paying attention to the body of the letter and what, you know, what they're sharing about their kind of interest in the overall experience of the scholar might be. So we also had a question about where our online directory is. So if we just go back to the Fulbright webpage, up at the top, I'm just going to go back to the main page here. You can see on the main page of the Fulbright Scholar Program that it says view this Fulbright Scholar directory. So you can click on that. And then it brings you to the page where you can search the online directory. So if you were looking for, in terms of the Outreach Lecturing Fund grant, if you were looking for any scholars not from the U.S., so any visiting scholars that are here, you would click non-U.S. Visiting scholar. Maybe you were looking specifically for the scholar in residences that are in country. You can also click on that. And you can indicate the academic year, because we do have our Fulbright directory going back for a number of years. So if you want to know actually who is active in the U.S. at the moment, you can search by the academic year itself. You can search by the discipline. If you're looking for a certain date range, so if you're wondering who's still in country through an end date of, you know, today or tomorrow or, you know, a couple weeks from now, then you can indicate that as well. And then when you press search, it'll pull up any of the scholars there. So I didn't really put too much in there, so you see a wide variety of scholars. But when you look at the Fulbright directory, then it'll include where they're located and where they are or were located in the U.S. if you're looking at a historical year. And then who their what their host institution might be, who their faculty associate or their main point of contact might be, and so forth. So you can take a look at that from there.
Can I add one more word about
OLF? Yes,
so, and there's no specific deadline date. It's a rolling competition, so you're basically going to apply any time. So if you went online now, as you did, you'll see that there's a range of scholars who are here. They're primarily researchers. They're here for 2 months to an academic year. So lots of them will be finishing, for example, this summer. There'll be a new directory going online on October 1st, maybe even a little bit earlier than that, with scholars who are confirmed. So you can see who will be here next year. So you would then look at that new group of people if you're looking at OLF for the 17-18 academic year.
And then another question that we've seen come up is sort of related to institutions that may be a little bit smaller and feel that they don't necessarily have the experience or the resources to host a visiting scholar. So maybe if we could share a little bit more information or tips for those types of institutions to consider partnering with another institution and some of our success stories.
Sure. So we see every year, a handful of schools that decide to partner in a sense, they're sharing the scholar. They've thought through how the scholar could be utilized on both campuses. You'd obviously want to work with a school that's near you so that an issue of transportation is not a problem for the scholar, so that they're able to travel to both campuses. But it's a nice way of sort of building a partnership between the schools. One school may have experience in one area, another school may have experience in another area. So in a sense, combining resources, it gives the scholar, in a sense, sort of a double opportunity to engage with students and faculty. And it seems that when we see the partnerships, it's often a school that's one of the targeted schools, perhaps a larger school that's maybe not one of our targeted schools. So the scholar then gets an experience with different kinds of institutions. But we've also seen partnerships between two community colleges, or two minority institutions. So the arrangement can really be done, as you see fit. But we do ask that when you look at that partnership, that one of the schools in the partnership is belonging to one of the targeted school categories.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes you may also be wondering what's going on as far as, not necessarily technically speaking, but beyond the point at which your institution may have found out that they have been recommended for funding, and then what happens with your named scholar. So basically on our end, we're contacting our counterparts abroad to ask them to confirm that the scholar is available during that period of time. And then the scholar who's either recruited or named would be asked to put forward sort of a shortened version of our visiting scholar application. So, you know, if you're naming a specific scholar and they're wondering at what point they should be applying for the program, they should hold off until kind of the late winter, early spring, when we reach out to the hosting institute or to the posting commissions abroad to ask them to confirm that particular scholar. So we'll be supplying them with specific instructions on what would need to be collected from them and things like that while we're concurrently working with your institution to confirm the affiliation and any funding elements on there as well. One thing to note, too, that given that we're talking about how we've moved over to this kind of new platform, if you are encountering any issues, please do reach out to sir@iie.org so that we can track some of those, because, you know, we won't know how things are going without hearing from you on the front lines as you're working through the application. And, you know, we're hoping that the more enhanced system might provide you with a little bit of an easier time as you're putting forward. The application itself is really straightforward. The narrative proposal is straightforward, you know, in comparison to some other grant opportunities that we've seen out there. So we really want to provide you with as much support and assistance as possible to put forward the application. So we do have a variety of success stories every year of institutions who have never hosted a visiting scholar before, infrequently hosted a visiting scholar, about how great it is to have a visiting scholar on their campus. And a lot of the scholars that come through the Scholar in Residence program, being that they're one of few, really have a fulfilling and an enriched experience as a result, because they, you know, they're the only one there. So they're really, a lot of focus and attention is put on their time there, and it can be very productive. So we definitely encourage you to consider putting forward an application, reaching out to us, using as many resources as are available to you through the program website, as well as through our own knowledge, to put forward the application. Any closing thoughts, David, or frequently asked questions that you've encountered?
I guess the one thing I would say is, you know, as you go through the application process, probably the one area where people, if they're not successful, wonder why, it's because they haven't paid attention to all the pieces of the application. So please do that. Go through it methodically, sort of step by step. As Cecilia said, it's not that difficult, but we do, you know, we want you to work through that. You know, I think it's unique among Fulbrights because it's one of the few opportunities for Fulbrighters to come and actually do teaching on campus. So it's really a great way for you to internationalize your campus, to bring someone in that's got a comparative or international perspective to courses that are being taught. Because of the fact that you're writing this proposal and you sort of thought through exactly what the scholar will do, you know, as Cecilia said, that really does lend itself to a great experience both for you as the host campus and host institution and for that scholar. You thought through, you designed this blueprint, and the results usually are really very good.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then we often or sometimes get questions as wondering if there's like some sort of roster of scholars that we draw from through the Scholar in Residence program. We really don't have sort of a roster in that sense for SIR, because since it's generated out of the hosting institution, then a lot of times these kind of connections are made through the hosting institution. And then if it's a case that we're recruiting a scholar, we rely on the people in the field to sort of locate some scholars. So definitely stay tuned. If you are a scholar, stay tuned to your either stay tuned to your poster commission or the Fulbright office in your home country to see as any opportunities arise, or you're welcome to sort of seek out a hosting institution that might be interested in hosting you as well. So, you know, we are on kind of our end to work with host institutions. So, you know, definitely direct any host So we hope to receive all of your draft applications and all of your application forms submitted on October 16th. We look forward to hearing from you and working with you through the next upcoming months as we lead to the due date, and hopefully some of the ideas that you might have as far as hosting a scholar could kind of become a reality. So this particular webinar, as well as all of our other webinars, will be archived on our website on the landing page for SIR. So you can refer back to it in that manner. And if you would like to walk through the application together again some other time, we're happy to do that with you on an individualized basis. And we'll also have kind of an open call for questions and application session on September 15th, 2017. So be sure to join us for that one as well. And we're happy to work through all the last-minute questions you might have before the due date in October. So thank you again, and have a wonderful afternoon.